the compensation fund. And two, it's going to be relating to issues that we dealt with in our last meeting. But to the line, go through the meeting of the meeting, through the agenda.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, members. Good morning to the department at large. The agenda for today, Wednesday, the 6th of September, is as follows. Apologies, adoption of agenda, a briefing, as Chair has mentioned, on the previous progress report was requested with regards to the action plan of the compensation fund. And the committee will deliberate on that presentation. It will then be followed by another presentation on the project of the Gauteng and the LAP project. Committee will deliberate on that, and then will be consideration of the internal documents of the committee, the minutes, the quarterly report, oversight visit, and then we look at the revised committee program for the. Thank you, Chair. I only speak with one apology. Thank you, Chair, for Mr. Magician attending another meeting.
Did it come at the right time? Okay. Members, the agenda is in front of us. Any additions? If none, adoption. Honorable Teko, and then Honorable Mjogo, and Honorable Bakri, appropriate. Members, I think it will be proper for me, before we start the proceedings of today, to take you back to the meeting that we're supposed to have a week before last. That meeting could not take place. I hear that there is misinformation as why that meeting did not take place. The Department of Labor has no authority to cancel the meeting. I want to first apologize to the opposition because before I agree or I cancel the meeting before time, I always talk to the leaders, all of them. It was only last time where they were met only with the notice. It was for the first time, and my apologies. However, I have taken that decision because I've consulted, because what I got from the department is that the DG was not going to be around. The committee does not deal with the officials. The accounting officer of the department is the DG. And the reasons why the DG was not going to be here were very clear and understandable. Because after the meeting that we had last time, we were not happy at all with what we have encountered in our oversight. As a result of not happiness, we decided to make it short. And apparently, I got from the minister in any case before he could tell me that immediately after that meeting, what the DG did is to summon all those who are responsible for the project around the country, took them somewhere for days, and that day as well, he was not going to be here, but he was going to send some officials, and I was not happy. TFMA is very clear, the accounting officer is one. That's why other committees, when there's no DG, people are sent back, they're not happy. So, and the compensation fund is not one of those entities. the DG had to come and account for himself, because if Commissioner Mafata cannot explain certain things, the DG must take responsibility. DG must account for us. So it is for those reasons. And for us to rush him to say, for me to say, no, cut that meeting short, come here and come in account. He's going to come here and say, we were consulting, taking the whole, all of them under one roof and come and do what we wanted. I think we are human beings. We have to be human when we deal with people. So it was for that reason, so that they don't come here and say, no, we wanted to do this or we were going to do this, but because you rushed us to the meeting. So, but now we gave them that time. They are here. There is no excuse as to why they can't give us a proper place. So it was not the DG. I cancelled the meeting and I have consulted. But unfortunately, it was too late for my colleagues in the opposition. It's the first time that it has happened. I don't do it. You know, I put you under that conference call. And I'm sorry, it's not going to happen again that you are confronted. You can't, I can't communicate with you through this staff of parliament. But I had, I don't want to give excuses now, but thank you. I can see from your head that at least you accept my apology. Thank you. Anything that we want to say before we start with the processing of the day? Over to you, DJ.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and good morning, Chairperson, the honorable members. Today I'm very honored to be here. It's my birthday, and I get to spend it Chief Director Coit Services. Where is she? There she is. We also have Ms. Ndombekaya Kamata, who's the Chief Director Corporate Support. We have the CFO of the Compensation Fund, Mr. Johnny Modiba. And we have the commissioner from the compensation from the unemployment insurance fund, Mr. Tebo Komakulin, sitting right next to me. And we have Ms. Nonya, who's the chief director responsible for the activation program. And we have Ms. Cindy Zungu, who's the director responsible for the labor activation program. I don't see where she is. And we have
the minute is not here.
Went to print something. We have Chiamo Mulema, who is the Deputy Director of Monitoring and Evaluation. And we have the Chief Communication Officer of the Department, Mr. Debo Patijane, and Mr. Wendy Dwengu, sitting right next to me from my office, and the Advocate Kegi, also from my office. That's the delegation. Chairperson, the last time we appeared before the committee, we indicated to the committee that we started with the
implementation of the action plan to turn things around at the compensation fund. And at the time, we indicated that we were sitting at just above 50% in terms of the targets that we set in the action plan. Today, we're sitting at, it's 83%. We're sitting at 83% in terms of doing some of the things that we said we will do. The most important thing that we said to the committee is that one of the things that we want to do to turn the compensation fund around is to change the business model of the compensation fund. We said we wanted to break the compensation fund into three areas of focus. One, the compensation benefits and pension. And the second one is the medical services. And the third one is a unit dealing with rehabilitation, disability and rehabilitation. So we then put together a structure that responds to that need. And we're happy that the minister approved the structure, and we're now well on our way in terms of the implementation of that structure. And that's why I was able to introduce the two colleagues that I introduced to the committee. So we have the view that the structure will actually redirect, because the focus will be on the line function, not on the on the administration as it was previously. So I'm going to ask the commissioner to just run through the presentation, Chairperson, and then we'll take questions.
Thank you. Over to you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members. As the DG has indicated, the action plan has been developed, and our action plan focuses on four areas, which was aimed at improving service delivery, as well as increasing the efficiency of the fund in terms of its administrative, its financial management, as well as its operations, and also looking at restoring the reputation of the fund that has been impaired by the lack of service delivery in the fund. And we focus on four pillars: on financial administration, on customer service, on business processes, as well as on people management issues. At the end of August, we had implemented about 23% of the activities that we had identified in the plan, and we are still in progress with about 16% of these activities that have been concluded. If we look at the financial administration, there's a number of projects, and that slide just shows those that we have completed and finalized, and those where we are still well underway in finalizing and dealing with. Now, within financial management, Chair, we wanted to review the employee assessment model. That process has started. We're actually taking the policy through the socioeconomic impact assessment study. And also, we have also introduced it at NEDLAC for discussion with the social partners. And once the discussion with the social partners has been finalized, we then publish the policy for comment and implementation at the beginning of the next financial year. Here, we're trying to reduce the number of classes that we use to assess employers. Currently, there's 103 different rates that we use to charge employers. And that's one of the reasons why the audit problems we have. So we are reducing this to about 6 classes that would then have only 6 different rates. That would also help us to deal with issues of fraud. The issues around, we recorded last time that we had implemented with discount that we during a specific financial year 2012, and this had not been paid to employers, and it was affecting their ability to be able to generate letters of good standing, as well as impacting on their cash flow. So we were able to finalize this and pay all the outstanding money that we due to employers. We have started with the issues around loading and reduction, because the COIN Act is such that even employers' performance with regard to incidents is much better than those of its peers, that the DG may be able to reduce tariff that we charge to an employer. And if it's much worse than those of its peers, then the DG also has the ability to be able to load the assessment and increase the assessment. One of the things that we have not been able to do this accurately, which is an issue that has been raised by the Auditor General. Now, due to the information that we've built up in our claims system, we're now able to do this through an actuarial process. We also said we wanted to improve the issues around debt collection because we had a system that was incorrectly calculating amounts due to employers and interest and penalties that were levied on employers. That is that some of the employers were not able to pay because of the incorrect, the disputes around the incorrect calculation. We then developed, we came up with a project that was aimed at cleaning up and correcting the functionality of the system. So this was also done and finalized before the end of the 2016-17 financial year. So around March, we were then able to write off or reverse about 2.4 billion that had been incorrectly raised as debt to employers. And this then led to us having a complete and accurate debtors book that went through the audit during the financial year that just ended. And the amount that has been collected also then led to some of the issues that the Auditor General had been raising falling away with regard to the completeness and accuracy of our revenue. We've implemented policies that were lacking in the fund to deal with issues of financial management, particularly in the supply chain management area. And this is also shown by the improvement in some of the issues that were made by the AG during the audit in the financial year. We've improved the processes within which we pay our claims. We said we wanted to improve this. We migrated all our payments to SAP so that we can then have an accurate details of the beneficiaries that we pay. And this was done successfully. The project went live in December last year. And by May this year, we were then able to pay all our pensions, our medical claims, and everything else out of the SAP system, which is what we're trying to do, to consolidate all our financial management competencies in one specific system. On the customer service issues, we were able to finalize them four out of the seven projects that we have identified, and others are in progress. We have now a program where we dispense chronic medication to some of our pensioners as well as the aged claimants. So about 656 of the clients now that are in receipt of chronic medication are now don't have to go to a pharmacy to get medication. The medication gets delivered at their doorsteps. We also started engaging with hospitals and health medical service professional associations because at the time the problem was that we had a lot of hospitals and a lot of medical service providers that were turning away clients. Because of the improvement in some of the business processes and the regular engagements that we have with the service providers, we've been able to improve this, and we actually had limited instances of clients being turned away by medical service providers. We also, in the process, we've just developed the rehabilitation policy and the rehabilitation strategy to implement the reviewed functional structure of the compensation fund that the DG referred to earlier. We are now in the final stages of facilitating the approval process for the policy as well as for the strategy so that we can start implementing it. We've also started discussions with the some of the public health facilities to make sure that we can then pilot the rehabilitation service offering that we want to bring to our clients. We had a panel that was appointed by the minister to deal with issues of post-traumatic stress disorder, which was an issue that was a bending point at the time because the fund had been unable to adjudicate on time. Most of the cases were clients come with a post-traumatic stress disorder. The panel was appointed by the minister of experts to develop a policy on post-traumatic stress disorder. We will be publishing it soon for public comments. We targeted October to be able to publish it for public comments so that we can then implement it at the beginning of the calendar year next year. We also looked at some of the challenges we had around the customer complaints. We've modernized our call center system. A new system went live in July. We've also then set up teams that are then supporting provinces with regard to troubleshooting and dealing with a lot of the common customer complaints around our claims and assessment of employers. With regard respect to internal business processes, we have been able to finalize two of the projects. The other projects are in progress, which is where the bulk of the work was with regards to improving service delivery. We've been able to restructure the DG as indicated. Now we have three focus core areas which are aimed at improving the service delivery of the fund. We also have targeted to reduce issues around backlog so that we can eradicate the backlog that were there at the time on both our medical as well as our compensation claims. We were able to get medical service providers. Initially, we were able to get the medical service providers on a professional basis to be able to help us deal with adjudication of claims. But subsequently, we also then appointed, because we had created posts of medical service officials, disability managers, medical doctors, and some of the nurses that are doing casework as well as adjudication of medical claims. Now, in all provinces, the provinces have appointed the majority of the medical service personnel. We now have medical doctors heading up the operations of the compensation fund in all the provinces. And also we recently appointed about four medical doctors and head office as well that are then guiding provinces and helping with issues of policy and strategy with regard to our medical service as well as our claims offering. We also now, with the migration of our payments to SAT, we're then able to deal with most of the vouchers that remained open when we moved the claims processing system from SAP to Mexico. Now with the payment platform having been stabilized with SAP, we're now starting to deal with a lot of those claims that have then been opened at in SAP. We've done the quality assurance of the current Mexico system, and the project was able to identify a lot of the gaps that are in the system. We have then started a number of projects that are aimed at enhancing some of the functionalities on Umefluco so that then employers, when they interact with the system as well as the claimant, it becomes an easier process for them. And this has, we've achieved much success here, because we even see with the rate of claims that we're processing now and the medical claims that we pay as well as the compensation claims that we pay. We also wanted to improve case management. I indicated that we appointed case coordinators in the provinces, which are medical officials. We also wanted to have a case management process in place. We wanted to get a health risk manager to be able to do the case management on our behalf because of the footprint of the hospital that our clients go to. But we also have an internal process where we then have our medical case coordinators that are working in the provinces as part of the implementation of the rehabilitation strategy, where they're working with our clients to case manage most of the clients so that we make sure that our clients get the right care at the right time, and also we pay for the right services that need to be given to our clients when they are in healthcare facilities. We also then implementing a case management system for our Section 91 hearings, because when clients are not happy with the outcome of their claims, they have an opportunity to lodge an objection with the DG, where they can then state their case. This process has been managed manually up to now, and one of the reasons why we have delays in finalizing some of the Section 91 cases, we now want to introduce an electronic process to manage these cases. We are enhancing initially we wanted to use the similar system that has been used by CCMA, but once CCMA gave us approval to use the system, we identified a number of gaps that would not be able to help us that are suitable for the business of the CCMA but not for ours, and then we took it in a decision that we would then use the existing sub-platform to enhance it to deal with this issue. Now the project will be going live on the 10th of October this year, and from October we'll then be dealing with these cases on an electronic basis, which will make it easier for our clients. We're also looking at the number of things that we're implementing with regards to dealing with issues of fraud, and there are a number of projects that we've done, the screening of officials, and making sure that we come up with fraud and ethics training to all court officials. And as part of the new structure, we've also created an anti-fraud management unit, and it's also then going to help deal with issues of ethics and fraud in the fund. The last pillar was people management, and we have finalized a number of these things. This is where the majority of the issues were as well with respect to people management issues. When we started the action plan, the fund had just finalized the decentralization process, and that decentralization process had a lot of unintended consequences in terms of unhappiness with the manner in which the some of the changes fund. So we had to deal with a lot of people issues, because the work that we do through people. So we identified it as one of the core pillars that we needed to make sure that we continue on, so that nothing stops the access and impediment or service delivery when it comes to our clients. We've done that identified to us what are the areas of skills that we need in the fund. Hence, we are indicated we've appointed the number of medical service personnel that we've appointed number of skilled personnel within our financial management area out of the results of the skills audit that we've undertaken. Currently, a lot of the staff that we have are also now embarking on a number of training interventions to try and address the gaps that have been identified. We've improved the issues around performance management, the communication within the fund, as well as dealing with all the unintended consequences that came out of the decentralization of the compensation fund. We also then did the review of the organization structure, as the DG indicated. We are now implementing the structure to make sure that we improve the way we do things. This slide is just an indication of how far we've come in the last few years in terms of the number of claimants that we've registered, as well as the number of payments that we've made in the last financial year. And this just shows the improvement there, that we paid about 4.1 billion last year in total benefits. For the year up to, and for April to August this financial year, we paid already about 1.4 billion in claims. So then that just shows that there is the processing of claims that is taking place, and the number of beneficiaries that are due for benefit, who has benefits due, are now receiving some of their benefits. And when you look at how much we've come in the first 5 months of the financial year, it shows that we will surpass the 4.1 billion that we paid in the financial year that just ended. So the subsequent slides is just the same information and graphically showing how we performed comparing the last about the four financial years, full financial years, and the 5 months of the current financial year.
Thank you. Clearly marked the pages. So that's why I'm moving here, because I want to see everybody so that everybody can see it. Let's deal with this presentation. Thank you, Gigi. Thank you, Commissioner Mafata. I usually call you at the end. I allow members to say whatever they want to say about your presentation. Members, I see the hand Honorable Bakri. The hand Honorable Al-Skafa, Fanfambe, and then Loliwe. You'll be after Honorable Loliwe, Honorable Kaula. In that order. Yes, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mafata, and I apologize for my voice. I'm starting to sound almost French, so I'm sorry about that. I'm referring to page 5 of the physical handout, which makes it easier for me to refer to it, if I may. Top slide on page 5. Just easier because I don't have numbers of the actual slides. Well, they are, but I can't see it.
Pages are fine.
Is that right?
Yes.
The 2.4 billion you've identified, and you put the word possible correction. I'm just trying to work this out of my head. Either it is incorrect or it isn't. If it is incorrect, have you gone back to the employer body to tell them that it's incorrect? Because I think a lot of people are still suffering trying to challenge these things, and you're probably getting millions of letters. I mean, I know I have been getting at least thousands of letters, emails, saying they've been incorrectly charged. So I just wanted to have a look at that. The next thing is that next slide, I think it's slide 10, was on page 5. And I'm pleased to see that the SAP system is now eventually starting to work at last, and you've now integrated it, or you almost integrated it, with your Mfecol system. Do you have onboard SAP experts, and that you're not outsourcing it all the time? Because this is going to be your real problem for going forward, is the SAP system, because it's my understanding, and I'm not someone who understands computers at all, but the SAP system is not that easy to correct and to adjust and to work. And so I wanted to just have a look at your financial system to see if that's correct. If I can go to page 6 and slide 12, you've had a look there at the customer focus and service delivery improvement, which is fantastic to hear. Is it time now for me? I have about 1,000 private doctors on email. Is it time for me to conduct another survey, or do you want us to wait? When do you want that feedback? Because I've built up a database of about 1,000 medical practitioners. When I asked them last time, they said they are refusing to see workers' compensation patients. They're sending it to the public hospitals. Because they just never get paid and they never get feedback. That was conducted by me about a year ago. I'm happy to conduct another one now if you think now's the time right, because you're now proving that it's all finalized. You've said that I think 3 are in progress. You must just tell us who's on it, and then I can give you that feedback. I just don't want to get the same feedback from the doctor saying there's still problems, won't get any joy out of it. The chronic medication on page 7, I think it's number 13, slide 13. You said that you've dispensed medication to 637 clients. Well, I mean, that's a drop in the ocean. That's a good start. But I can presume that's less than 1% of the people on chronic medication. Maybe you could tell us about that. Because I know people are taking sick leave to go and fetch their chronic medication. Most of the people I know who feedback to me take the day of work off work to get their chronic, and they have to go once a month or once every 2 months and fetch it. It might be a way of sorting this out. And 637 is pitiful, absolutely pitiful. I'm pleased to see that you're having the monthly meetings with the hospitals, but there must be a way in which not only you improve the relations with the hospitals and other stakeholders, but that these hospitals in turn improve the relations with your claimants. So that you should add another bullet point there for that. At slide 15, 16, page 8, there's ongoing progress to eradicate backlogs about medical and compensation claims. Obviously, this is the real issue, because you had, I don't know how many millions you had of, before you arrived on the scene, you arrived with a hunchback, and that backlog, I'd like to hear from you as to how far are we, and when is that backlog going to be eradicated? A year ago you told us that you were hoping to do it by this year. I know it is an enormous task, but you did make a promise to us. I can go and get those minutes out, but that's what you said you were going to try and do. I'm not holding you to it, because at least you're ongoing. And at page 9, slide 17, here you're talking about the integration, and you said it will recommence. maybe you can tell us when this is going to happen. Because this is, without this, you'll never get any backlog cut. Once these two systems are working together, I think you'll find much smoother flow. But you say this project will recommence. My understanding is that it is going. And that recommence is not the correct word. Words. Slide 18, also on page 9, the implementation of a CCMA case management system. Hooray, this is fantastic. And I think it will take a lot of pressure off the DG because those Section 91 hearings must be a massive backlog as well. And maybe you can tell us how you're going to handle that backlog with everyone challenging the outcome. If you go to page 10, and I apologize, Madam Chair, I've just got a few more to go. The implementation of the fraud prevention plan. I think you're referring to internal fraud over here, or is it external fraud? I'm not understanding it properly. There you're talking about your officials, but I'm also talking about possibly another slide for external fraud. You know as well as I know that there are people who claim who never got hurt at work. And they put that in. And I'm not sure how you're going to manage that. I know I've written to you a few times saying that I don't believe this injury took place at work. And yet they're still getting paid. And that puts another pressure on the system with naughty people who shouldn't be getting paid. There must be a way of finding that out. And you should get the companies to report to you. You haven't got inspectors for that. But the companies can certainly report it to you if there was a window for them to comment on whether they think this actually occurred. Because every employer is obliged. If an employee comes and says, I've just broken my ankle and it happened on my way to work this morning, they're obliged to put in a claim form. But in fact, it happened on Sunday when they were playing soccer. But this is a nice way to get the monies paid. And I can hazard a guess if my small office is dealing with about 30 at the moment of those, which we're unhappy about, there must be a lot more out there. I'm sure they don't all come to me. the people management issue is great, and obviously you're dealing with people and you've got mostly 100% here, so well done on that. But again, I want to know about the SAP experts that you might have brought on board or thinking about bringing on board. And thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have anything at this stage. Appreciate it.
So thank you. Then go to item page 9 on the interim of in-house. My concern is the monitoring tool. How do you monitor your system that the right thing has happened at the right time? And I also, the intervention on page 8, slide 8, when you say the eradication of the block of operations management, we also count the intervention, say, we will be meeting now and then for the ongoing monitoring, so how you update us now and then, how far are we, and how are we performing, is this system assisting us, or are we improving or not.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to echo in my colleagues in welcoming the report. I see that the current status of the implementation plan is failing at 83%. But we acknowledge that a lot of work has been done. But we need to see that it's really moving faster. Because we know that we are having this action plan for quite some time and coupling that with the findings of the AG's report that has been reduced to 89, but still it's so much. And we need to see more action being taken in trying to totally reduce that number of the findings. So what my question is, what are you doing, or do you have a timeline where you want to see that you are totally eradicating these findings as well as you reach the 100% level of implementation? Currently, I want to know what is your backlog that you have in terms of your claims. And also, do you, in terms of your fraud prevention plan, do you have current fraud cases or new cases that have been found either internally or externally? And then when we look at page 23, I don't know, Chairperson, I only looked at my presentation that I'm giving, and I didn't look at the presentation that was showing there. But I only realized when the presentation, in terms of the slide 23, in terms of the progress on claims processing, I only realized that there's a difference in the amounts. The slide that I'm seeing, there's the current status of 1 million rand, and when I looked on the screen that time, it showed 1.4 million. So I'm not quite sure. I didn't see. So it seems as if I have the wrong presentation. So can I just have some indication there? And can the department take us then through if we, all of us, have the same presentation that it seems to be not updated? Where is the areas that they updated it currently, so that we can zoom into those areas for those of us who didn't take note of it? Thank you.
Commissioner, I'm on page 4. On page 4, when you talk about loading initial ICT interventions, you are halfway in that implementation. We understand of a committee that for some time we had a problem with the IT issues. May that be a cause? Because I'm glancing that is what is contained on page 16, where you are talking about rehabilitation of injured employees, where you are also halfway. To me, both aspects are critical. And for you to have a 50% performance whilst your overall is 83, those are some of your areas of priority. What is your plan to quickly improve on that? Then on page 9, I think it's slide 17, not 18, let me go there, where you say you don't have a suitable service provider. There was no, on to improve hospital case management, you said there was no suitable service provider. And then that led to you reviewing the specification. Was the budget too high for the service provider or what? Because it's something which is not easy to understand, where you have some institutions running to CCMA. Yes, I know it's case management, which is mostly handled at CCMA. But when it comes to you to get somebody who has the qualification you are found wanting? Was it because the bar is high? What is the implication of reviewing the specs for that particular service provider? The last one, where you are talking about people management, I applaud the progress there. But can we get assurance then that now that there you are performing so well, are we going to get value for the money?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, let me also welcome the presentation. I see that the action plan, according to the presentation, was developed 2015 and implemented 1st July 2015. I want to believe that obviously it's the first time we get a report about the action plan. I want to check, and also I see that there's an affirmation up front that it does not seek to replace the strategic plan. But I want to check the synergy and also the concurrent implementation of the action plan and the strategic plan. Whether, because the action plan, in my view, is obviously a measure that has been developed temporarily to arrest some of the challenges that is defined there. If you can just take us through how long does the action plan and message to us to see where we could see the fruits of it, or whether it is expected to run concurrently the strategic plan until the full duration of the applicant. And I want to obviously believe that the progress report that we are receiving is a progress report starting from 1st July, from the date of the implementation up until today. If I'm wrong, you correct me. But the point I want to make is that my immediate interest, in particular to the action plan, is around the backlogs that we have referred to, in particular the compensation. I'm also interested, but further, you must also be appraised from yourself, when do these backlogs dating from? Are they dating 3 years back? Are they dating 5 years back? And also the envisage date of the, which I think is what some of the colleagues have indicated, where we could see that we're done with the backlogs. That's number one. I see on the presentation that there was a paper that was developed with regard to the financial accountability. Therefore, there's a policy in place. I'm not sure if there's an annex of that policy yet. So that obviously we check if it is consistent with the protocols in terms of the PFMA. One would be interested in that. There's also on your slide 8 where it talks about the employer discount. I think it talks about 211 million that has been refunded back to employers. See, if we can just get further elaboration on that, what are those discounts that have been paid back to the employers? And then also, if you look at slide 89, I think it's what Honorable Barley has raised regarding the correction of interest and penalties on the 2.4 billion. I see that a decision was taken for the debt to be written off because obviously it was due to be a year from the department. But my interest, if I can just be taken through regarding the process that the department has followed, to ensure that there's accountability for that era. Because obviously, it means someone must have been sleeping on the job. So if you can just get a process that has been followed prior even the decision to write off the debt, obviously, in relation to accountability, because obviously, there should be accountability as far as that is concerned. There are also 20 policies that have been approved. Well, we just see, you see. But one is interested. If those 20 policies have been affected because of the intervention of the action plan, what are those policies? You see, even if we can be given an avalanche of them here as annexures, so that we are able to, because remember, from now on, we are going to monitor the action plan based on what you would have put to us. And amongst those is what we are saying that you have, the DD has signed off about 20 policies, which, in my view, are part of the tools that I use to make sure that you implement and you monitor, you ensure that this policy, this action plan becomes a success. So I'm interested to see those policies. If you can just be pointed them out. Well, around the people management, I should also welcome. And I see that it talks about the audit that the department has taken and has established some skills gap. And my interest, when you talk about skills gap, it means you're then going to get into a process of closing those skills gaps. And the question that I want to ask, what is the end of this period in terms of closing those gaps? And also, the depthness of the gap. Because obviously, you are talking about an entity of department that has been existing for a long time. So if you are going to say at this point in time, 2017, an entity that has been existing for so long, and you are talking about skill gaps, I'm interested on the depth of those skill gaps, on whether, so that if it is about a situation whereby we're engaged into a brother-to-brother employment to a point that we have employed people that do not have skills at all, and hence the skills gap, we're also taken through, you see. But if it is on the basis of the new system that has been introduced, as a result, there are gaps, which needs an intervention which will not last even a week or month, it will be a different thing. But to say that we're talking about the skills gap for Kaula, who has been employed with standard aid, as a result is unable to react with the system, then it means we're in a state of crisis. Thank you very much. Chair.
There is no other hand. For now, I think thank you. And Commissioner, indeed, the report is very clear. And some of us were there when you started with the action plan. I understand some members came late. Honorable Kaula replaced his colleague. And when that action plan started, before it started, then what happened, he was not there. So yes, I think you will have to put him into light what happened and why all the questions that he's asking is the right to ask him. But the report really, some of us who have been there, we do see progress. And we know that we know where you started and we know where you are going. An action plan, as it was said earlier on, action plan is not something that, because when action plan is a tactic, we'll call it a tactic to us, tactic to reach to your goal or to reach to your strategy. And tactics, therefore, will change now and again, taking into consideration what is existing. But it is for them to tell us where they had to change, you know, to fit in to their final goal. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Commissioner will respond to most of the questions. I just want to paint this picture. If you go to the slide that reflects, I think it's the last slide that slide that reflects process on claims, progress on claims processing. And that's, if you look at that slide tells a story about where we
where we come from and how far have we moved as the compensation fund. And if we say in 2016-17 we've paid just over 4 billion claims, it's an indication that we no longer have a problem with regards to processing of claims as we had in the past. I can tell you now that we don't have new claims that are sitting there not being processed like we had in the past. And I can confidently say I can sit in my office now and not be afraid of sheriff coming in to give me a court order. That is a thing of the past, because those things were happening on a daily basis. So because of this action plan that we put together, we've been able to ensure that the compensation fund does the basic things that it was supposed to do. I want to go back to the to the issue of the the issue raised by Honorable Khaula, the concurrency of this action plan to the strategic plan of the compensation fund. This action plan, like we're saying, does not replace the strategic plan of the organization. What this action plan seeks to do, it seeks to point us in the areas that we need to focus in terms of improving the overall performance of the organization. And these are things that you cannot do over a period, 1 year period. And our focus is on changing the culture of the organization, which takes a long time to achieve. And even now, we're not saying we're out of the woods yet. We're not. But I think we are able to observe steady progress. And one of the reasons, if you go through the action plan itself, you realize that in the action plan, we're saying this is what we want to do. And out of the action, there will be other activities, eight or four activities out of the action that we want to take. And we'll say we've done this, we've done that, we've done that, we've done that. And the critical thing that we had to deal with is the fact that we, even our system, was not enabling us to process. And that is why we had to go back to the SAP system and make sure that the SAP system works with the Mwehluko system. They are able to interface, and in the past they were not interfacing. So we could not even count properly for the what we've collected and how much the employers were owing us. So we were able to do those things. Now, the duration of the action plan, we were supposed to have by the 31st of March 2017. We were supposed to have completed everything. Now, the reason we haven't done that is because of the IT challenges that Commissioner Mafata referred to that are still, that we're still achieving. I mean, we're still giving us challenges. Now that we have renewed our licenses with SAP, we're able to move faster in addressing some of the IT challenges that we're facing us as an organization. The backlog, the committee will remember that we came here, we appeared before the committee where we spoke at length about the backlog, and we categorized this backlog into two. We said we had a backlog relating to the cases that are coming in, and also the legacy cases. So what we're referring to now are legacy cases. These are cases that were on the old system that we're using. I think we're using Access 1.
system called SS1. When we migrated to Mahluko system, those cases were not migrated to the new system. And the reason for that was that, and it's my view, it's my considered view, Chairperson, that we should not have accepted those claims, those applications, because they were incomplete, most of them. Now, you can only process what we call competent application for you to be able to make a decision and accept liability. Now, the challenge that we're sitting with, I think we're sitting with around 60,000 cases. Now, the reason why we're sitting with these cases, the committee will remember that we were here and we said, we've been on the radio, we've been on the newspapers, asking people to come back to the department. Those people who have claims that were not processed, they must come back to the department, furnish us with the details, because we can't move, we can't process this claim because it's outstanding information. And we even mooted the idea of a response handling kind of a company, which the committee said, no, it was not a good idea. So we backed off in terms of implementing that decision. We now, every now and then, when we're on radio, when we appear on every media platform, we talk about this backlog and that we encourage people to come forward so that we can process these claims. And we're now processing as and when people come in, we process the claims. If the committee is of the view that we must provide it with these financial policies and all these policies that we have implemented, and yes, they are a product of this action plan and the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. So we can make the policies available to the committee. And I just want to talk a bit about the skills audit and the gaps that were identified in the NSH period to close these gaps. And what is the depth of the skills gap? When I became the Director General of the department, and I was seized with the situation of the responsibility to deal with the situation of the compensation plan, the first thing that I observed is that people who were sitting in different positions that they were sitting in were not suitable for the positions that they were occupying, and hence we took a decision to remove the entire top management of the compensation fund and replace it with the current management that you see now, Commissioner Mafata and the other colleagues that are sitting here. We then said, the compensation fund, whether you like it or not, is a financial institution because of the nature of the work that it does. And it therefore requires people with financial skills and competence. So you can't have a section, finance section, which has limited, competences in finance. And that's a key area that we had to move in and plug the gaps. And this is actually the area that was identified by the skills audit as well, that you have serious gaps in the financial area of the compensation fund. And we've plugged that gap now. And that's why we were able to produce the financial statements going forward. So that's how deep the situation was. And also the fact that you had people that were not medically trained and medically qualified who were heading medical services. So that's why we had to make sure that we appoint people who are medically trained and medically competent to be able to adjudicate medical claims. And that's why we felt it important that in each and every province, the person who's heading the compensation fund must be a medical doctor. Be- because of the nature of the business that we're in as a compensation fund. So those are the gaps that we play. That's how deep the problem was, and these are the steps that we've taken to close the gaps. I think that the commissioner will deal with the rest of the rest of the questions.
Thank you, DJ. If there is no follow-up from what you're saying, I just want to say we remember last time because you really wanted to you were going to outsource this responsibility of looking for these people that are not coming forth so that the system can be trained like before. We refused because we thought of the money that you are going to use for that agent. And we asked you if you can't use your own resources. Yes, you don't have enough resources, but the money that you're going to use for consultants, that money you can look, we can look for people in our own constituencies, all the members, people who are qualified to do the job, and you can recruit yourselves and know that people are there in the villages where it's difficult to get, using your mobile unit. If you don't have more, you have a responsibility to have more mobile units to get to the people. We understand, I think I do understand where you come from with the people, but I think you still have to do more. But members, ourselves, as we're doing constituency work, people, we should make a call. We have a right, we can do that in your constituencies, you're not doing, and call OTG to issue, to give someone where you go around and say, here's the Department of Labor, and these are the things that they can provide. Look for people that are there, so that all of us, we get to a situation and say, we have done everything. Even members of parliament who are not necessarily in this committee, because we all work around the country, and that's where all these people, that 60, because even if the family of those people, some of them might not be alive by now, but the families will remember that I have someone, or, you know, people don't understand when we ask these questions, and people who have asked, did you have someone, clear questions, simple questions, that might not be clear when the department is calling for people. But if you say, you have someone who was working, who never got money, where were you working, did your father get money, where was he working, things like that, it's for us members of parliament as well to assist. We can talk to our colleagues in other committees and then do that work as well. Assist, but call them to come to your constituency and talk to people and assist people. Honorable Nakata. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Why don't we go back to employer bodies with the 2.4 billion that is looking back to the accounts and so on. We, every employer that was affected would have received a credit in his or her account, and this would then be communicated to them through the statement that they get, and because it happened also at around here, and which is the same period within which employers are submitting the return of income, they would have seen those credits in their account, and so everyone who was affected has been informed of the money that we then credited back to the account. Those that had paid, they would have credit. Those that had not been paid, they would find that their balance is now at zero, as it should correctly reflect. The issue around the integration of SAP with Google, we use a combination of internal skills as well as outsourced, because sometimes you don't continuously go on the development mode. So when you need development done, you would then use the services of service providers to be able to do the minor development work that you want to do. And with regard to some of the support functions within the SAP, some of those are performed by officials within the department, and some then outsourced to service providers with the specialty required. The survey, I think, Honorable Bakrim, you can do the survey. A lot of the doctors have seen the improvement. Others still say because of the of how they had to deal with the compensation fund in the past, they don't have the confidence that things have truly changed and so on. So and that's a subjective view of a lot of the medical service providers. That the only way we can change it is by continuing to do what we mandated to do, which is paying them. And we would have seen that a lot of them tell you that even money that were due since 2011, 2010, they've seen that money coming into their account over the last 2 years or so that we've been dealing with this. The chronic medication, if it's a drop in the ocean, the compensation fund has about 28,000 pensioners, and only a small set of those pensioners are on chronic medication. The 656 that we've dispensed to now, those are the ones that are currently on active scripts from doctors in terms of them getting chronic medication. The idea here was to pilot this dispensing of medication with the chronic patients, and if it's work and we've learned some lessons there, and, we can then roll it out even to people that are getting acute medication if a person has been hospitalized and so on, so that over time our clients don't have to go to pharmacy for medication. This medication can be brought to them. So we wanted to pilot it with the chronic medication first. There is no backlog of Section 91 here. We tend to enroll cases as they come. We enroll them onto the roll so that they can be dealt with. So most of the cases that are on Section 91 are current cases. So that's why when we implement an electronic system, we just want to better improve it on the turnaround time so that when a case is submitted, we're able to deal with it much quicker than we are currently. Where if a claimant is not happy with the outcome of a claim, whether with the level of disability that has been assigned to his or injury, or whether the claim has been repudiated where we have not accepted liability, they have the right to then submit a request for hearing through the DG.
The mechanism of doing that, how do they do it?
When we provide a response, when we provide the letter with the response, we also indicate the fact on the letter that if they're not happy, and then we also attach the form that they need to complete. So we then complete the form and then send it to bring it up to the compensation fund. But we have a tribunal process that is put in place. We appoint presiding officers, both from organized labor as well as business. We also have medical practitioners on the role as well. So they then look at the case, and then the client will then state his or her case with the assistance of a trade union representative. The issue around the, I think we note all the comments that have been made around the intervention that we have, and also whether there's tools to do that, what to manage, to case manage and so on. What we are, because this is also one of the new concepts in the fund in terms of case managing. A lot of our clients who are hospitalized, because we find that sometimes as a way to make money, our clients will be kept in hospital much longer than they need to be, or kept in ICU or whatever the case might be, whatever means that a hospital is able to generate revenue. So we are introducing this concept so that we can then be able to monitor the hospitalization of clients. If a client has been given an assistive device, the person has been given an assistive device that enables him or her to be able to continue normal life post the injury, or if it's hospitalized, the person stays for the required time in the hospital and then is able to leave. So we are, there is a lot of learning that we are learning from it, and we will then improve. We brought a lot of people on board in our staff establishment to be able to help us manage this aspect. We also note the need to reduce the findings that are there, and as the DG has indicated, the action plan was the first phase to implement all the basics that we didn't have at the time. And these are some of the basics that are helping us that have helped to start seeing a reduction in some of the findings from the Auditor General. We will then go into the second phase, where we now try to deal with once the basics are in place, so that we can address some of the other issues that the Auditor General. Chairman has raised, and we've noted that some of these things, because date as far back as even before 94, we're going to have to, it's going to take us some time to deal with the root issues, particularly around our revenue management area. And the assessment, the review of the assessment model is one of the key things that are going to help us to be able to address some of these issues that have been raised by the AG. And also, once we have stability in our IT systems, that also helps with the process. Do we have new cases in terms of fraud, internal and external? Yes, there are. From time to time, we have a hotline that is where that any claimant or any staff who has reason to suspect that there's fraudulent conduct that will happen, they report some of this, most of these cases. And these cases are investigated. We find that some of them will just be an allegation that is not necessarily true. In some of the cases where we find that there is been some wrongdoing, and the wrongdoing usually happens because a claim in the compensation fund, besides that, it requires multiple parties to complete. No person can have a claim and complete it all on his own. You have medical service providers that used to play a role in providing medical reports. You have the employer who must submit the notification of the accident. And so we find that in most of the cases that we investigate, we find that either some of these fraudulent claims have been brought on by medical service providers, in some of the cases even people working for employers. And we've seen a number of cases that have successfully been dealt with in the court, even in recent times, where doctors have been sentenced, others have had to even pay back the money that they've defrauded the fund. Whether the 1.4 billion versus the 1 billion that was on the slide, when we submitted the presentation, when we were due to appear on the 23rd of August, we had information as at the middle of August in terms of the claims that we paid. When we then had the opportunity to update at the end of August, once we closed the month of August on our books, we then updated it. So the 1.4 million that I paid today, total claims paid at the end of August, which is the 31st of August. I think the DG has addressed a number of things. There was a request from Honorable Khawla to explain the 211 million discount that we paid to employers. In 2012, as an incentive to encourage employers to submit a return of earnings, there was a campaign that where it was said that those that submit their return of earnings within the prescribed time frames, they would then be subjected to discounts of their assessment as an incentive to improve compliance. This was done. A lot of the employers complied with the request. However, from 2012 up until last year, the fund could not effect these discounts, pay them back to employers, because there was no functionality that allows us to be able to do it. So that's a situation that we found when we started with the action plan. We then also put in place some of the activities that will be aimed at enhancing the system to be able to allow us to do this. So that project was completed, and once it was completed, it was towards the end of the last of the 2015 financial year. We were then able to then effect all these discounts to give them to employers and pay back to the employer. So that's just in a nutshell the explanation of what the 211 was. I think the DG has addressed most of the other the value for money. I think, Chair, there is value for money in terms of the management intervention that we put in place. We can see that even with the improvement in the claims processing, shows that people are now doing what they're supposed to be doing. Whereas if you remember, around toward the end of 2014-15, I think almost production at the compensation fund had almost ground to a halt, because we were not paying service providers, we were not processing claims, people were just unhappy. But a lot of the interventions we put in place are starting to bear fruit now. We've just concluded with the senior management of the fund. We visited all the labor centers during the month of July and August. to try and assess also whether the some of the interventions that we've put in place are bearing fruit. And we've seen, even with the number of the issues that staff are raising, in fact, we're now getting less complaints from staff rather than more suggestions of how we can improve things. So it shows that there has been a some kind of a turnaround also with regard to staff. The issue around the specifications for hospital case management, what we found was that we, because of the challenges we had in the past, I think the requirements that we put in place for the service providers that would require for to hospital case manage were a bit higher than what should be the norm. And we found that we had carried things that in case management that should not necessarily be case management. These are the things that we should be doing ourselves as management. So when we then went back and reviewed the specifications, then we were able to focus to, so that we can get a focus that we want a service provider that will then risk manage health care that is provided to clients. But when it comes to the issue of managing our clients themselves, we need our own case manager to be able to be close to the client as opposed to leaving it to a service provider to do. The issue of rehabilitation, how far we are and why. This is one of the focus areas that we've recently developed in the fund, because we are saying that what we want to do is not every employee that is injured is not able to get back into employment. In some of the cases, we find that some of the skills that we lose in the economy when a person is boarded and has to stay at home and doesn't have to work, it's some of the skills that we may still require. The fact that a person is working on the factory floor or is working in a mine underground, if a person like that, an engineer who gets injured in such instances and is wheelchair bound, that person can still contribute in an organization in another form. So I think that's the whole rationale for having a focus on rehabilitation as well, so that we can then reskill some of our beneficiaries and then so that they can integrate back into the labor market.
I'm sorry, there are follow-up questions. Is that?
One.
No question. Honorable Stefan Kandel, and then Honorable Kaula. Honorable Boxley, Beckham, was your hand up. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm welcoming the feedback that we got, but I'm just wondering, in terms of the rehabilitation, the reskilling of employees, are you then assisting in terms of placement afterwards? Thank you.
Another good question. You did the last one.
Good.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just two issues that run out of it. Obviously, I'm very pleased to hear that the SAP system is now falling into place. You haven't told us about the training of your staff and the actual centres, because people are going to have to fill in with that SAP system. I did ask whether you've taken any experts full-time on. Your answer seemed to be that while you're rolling out the system, you've obviously outsourced it, which is correct. But it would be useful to have at least one or two experts in the system, because that seemed to be the problem with all the other systems that you had. They kept falling apart because no one seemed to know what was going on. And maybe you can comment on that. The other one is something that I did raise, and you now raised again, about, and we see this all the time, even in the private sector, where people are kept in hospital for 10 days instead of two. Or they over-medicated, and we keep hearing about that. I, in my own mind, am sure that this is a major problem, because you have a cash cow, you can keep milking it, and I don't seem to hear from you that you've got too much intervention over there, and especially with hospitals. I mean, maybe the punishment would be to say that your assessors would say, no, this is only an illness that would warrant 2 days. We're not paying you for 10. Then the hospitals might wake up. So I don't know, maybe you want to comment on that as well. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. I will just follow up from the questions that I've asked. I think I'm happy with the response on many of them. But I didn't see the response. I didn't hear the response on the 2.4 billion, whether it was a human error within the department or in the process of accountability as far as that. Or if it was just a system error, can just be taken to that. I accept the response regarding the people's management on the audit. I think it's, but I just want to check the extent of it in terms of the audit only confined from the national head office or the same process that you're referring to in terms of the gaps in the finance and also the medical fitness. Is it also the same situation even across the province, so that the communication can find expression also in public? Yeah, so just those two things. Thanks.
Commissioner?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. So the rehabilitation and reskilling, are we assisting with the placement? That's what we eventually want to get to. What we've done with the review of the structure, we also basically then also creating a unit that would focus. We want to have a three focused approach. We want to have, in addition to having a clinical rehabilitation, which is medical rehabilitation, we want to look at social rehabilitation as well, where we then reintegrate some of the workers back into the community using case field workers and so on to help integrate injured workers back into their communities, because oftentimes the person when he's on a wheelchair, there's assistance that is required to get him to get used to his surroundings at home and so on. So that's the rehabilitation what we want to look at. The third, we also want to look at vocational rehabilitation, where we then re-skill if there's a need for re-skilling of the client, and also work with the employer of the client itself, so that the employer can then re-integrate the person back into the work as opposed to just replacing the person. Our strategy now is we would then be working with the employers to keep the people in employment. But what we're hoping to do with the amendments to the current legislation is to create an incentive for employers so that employers actively participate. Because we find some of the big employers are doing it, where they will then rehabilitate the worker and then the worker comes back into employment. But some of the smaller employers don't do that. They will then rather replace the person, especially if a person has been declared permanently disabled. To get back to employment. So we want to set an incentive for employers through the assessments that they pay, that those employers that actively participate in the rehabilitation and rehabilitation of workers would then have a reduction in their assessment, which is using the Section 89 of the legislation. Currently, we're only using it where employer has less exceedance, where we then, as an incentive, we give them a reduced rate. So we want to link the issue of rehabilitation and reintegration back there. And obviously those that will not be able to reintegrate back into an employment, we need to be able to train them in such a way that either they can be able to create their own employment or so on, linking them with some of the other interventions that we have within the department, public employment services, shelter employment interventions as well. We want to have an integrated approach to the work that we're already doing in the department. So we will also then have labor activation as part of the rehabilitation process within the fund. The training of staff, we are doing it. I think that's one of the major lessons we've learned with some of the ICT interventions that happened in the past, that change management and training is a very important aspect of introducing new systems in the fund. So we are actively doing that, even with the recent integration of SAP to the Google. There was extensive training that took place. Hence, it was able to kick off smoothly the way that it has happened. The issues around overbilling as a problem. I think that's one of the reasons why previously we had limited medical expertise in the fund. So even if a doctor submits a request to reopen a claim or to take a client for further medical examination and so on, we actually had no way of questioning it because that's the knowledge that is only known to the doctor and so on. But the fact that now we have in all the provinces we've appointed occupational therapies that are helping us to manage disability issues. We have medical doctors in the provinces that are then also overseeing the operations of the fund, and are the ones that we then interact at the local level with some of the hospitals. We have a head office also appointed. About we have now staff about five doctor posts. We form them and been filled in the paperwork now, that are also going to be able to manage these things when they scrutinize the reports. Fortunately, in a claims process, in the compensation fund, you require medical reports from the doctor. So now we have some of our own personnel now questioning some of the recommendations that are being made by doctors and making sure that the clients get what justice, the treatment that they require. The 2.4 billion, it was a system error. I think it was when we implemented SAP in 2011, there were some of the configurations that were not ideally suited for the way that we configure the way we deal with our debt management. So when we identified that problem, the project was aimed on at correcting that system calculation error that was there. So it was there was no human involved in causing the error. The skills audit, we did the skills audit for all personnel of the compensation fund, whether they're sitting at the head office, in the provincial office, or in the labor center. So the report that we have shows the skills assessment of the compensation fund as a whole.
Any question that has been left unanswered? If the members are quiet, then it means you have answered all the questions. The tea will be ready very soon, but we're not going to break for tea. People will quietly go out, we'll announce it when it's outside. Go out, have tea, snacks, come back because of time. Now we are going to get to the second we will make a remark before at the end. Are you going to leave before it ends?
No, I just want to remark about Mr. Mufasa.
Then let's do it when they are finished. Yes. I have not remarked it. Just when everything is done, we can make one remark. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The committee last time asked the department to go back and look at the projects that we've had since my appointment. What we then did, we decided that because some of these projects, they overlap, we will go beyond that and look at the projects, left projects since inception. And that's the information that we provided to the members. I want to start, Chairperson, by apologizing to the committee for the committee not receiving the report a week before. Collecting this data has been a challenge, and we have not yet collected everything that we want to collect, but this is an ongoing process. We want to go and visit each and every project just to see to it that the project is there. And we derived value from that project. Be that as it may, that we've provided the committee with the report. What we sought to do with this report, Chairperson, is to explain to the committee the type of projects that we get involved in, and where those projects are, and how the unemployment insurance fund has contributed to each project, and what is the criteria that we use to get involved in a project. I think that's what we've put in the presentation. I'm going to ask the commissioner to run through the presentation.
Excuse me. Honorable Vena, comrades, in Gala, name and a hand in it. Because you can't talk across with your hands together. So in Gala, name and a hand. Over to you, DJ.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. And happy birthday once more, DJ. I saw there's a cake waiting outside. If you can move to page 3. Yes, I think, Honorable Members, what we're highlighting in the background as the DG touched on, we tried as much as possible to outline the purpose, look at the project since inception, and also look at how has the funding of labor activation progressed over time and what have we covered. How far did it go in terms of expenditure that was put together for the project? And also look at where possibilities were existed to absorb some of the trained members of UIF and some of the projects that the portfolio committee visited. What progress has been made? Have we visited them? Have we checked the details of the project? We also have the members through that part of the project as well. And then in terms of the background, I won't be reading line by line, but just walking the members through. Just on average, just to give members a feel, every single day, UIF pay about 15,000 beneficiaries per day, to the tune of between 20 and 32 million that you pay towards UIF beneficiaries. Now, 15,000 per day converts to about 750,000 beneficiaries paid a year, which converts to around between 7 and 10 million that you pay towards beneficiaries. But I didn't cover that. That's what people must that feel. Now, given this number, there's a need is defined in the Act that every UIF beneficiary that come in and claim, they must be available for employment. They must also be available for training as part of the requirements, which then triggers the training program that UIF has put in place. We've done an assessment over time to see what kind of beneficiaries are we receiving. In the main, most of them are semi-skilled. Some of them are skilled. We have about 4% of our beneficiaries that have post-matric qualification. Now, if 4% have post-matric qualification, it already tells us that our pool is unskilled and therefore requires a necessary intervention to upskill them. And it was that issue that triggered our intervention in terms of training. If you can go to slide 5. Now, with this slide, what you highlighted is, in the main, at the inception, we wanted to try enhancing employability through training. As we picked up that there was a gap in terms of skills, then we used training of unemployed as an instrument to train our beneficiaries. I'll touch on that as we move on. The main aim was to strive to reintroduce the beneficiaries directly to the labor market, but also to increase their competitiveness, because some of them have matric, and all you need is just to give them that extra leverage as they enter into the market, that they have at least something that they can hang on to. We didn't spend too much time into placement, really, but on lifting the skill level so that they are able to participate competitively to the labor market. And therefore, we also plug them into our employment services system. So that then when the placement is done by test, they can also pick up these trained UI beneficiaries and possibly find an opportunity to place them. The other things that you speak about to mitigate against possible layoffs, the instrument that you use is training layoff scheme. I'm going to touch on that as well. The other driver was job saving or preservation through Productivity SA. In the main, within Productivity SA, we find turnaround solutions to close that gap. In slide number 6, I've touched on it briefly as I was talking, that the drive in the beginning was job skill. UIF beneficiaries because of their skill level and bring them to a level where they're able to compete with others. And also give them skills that are in demand in the economy, like your technical skills or artisanry, so that at least they're able to be placed where opportunity arises. And as a result, Chair, I just want to indicate up front that then the drive for placement was limited or the drive to ensure that people get placed into opportunities was limited, but we're driving more to upskill them and make them more competitive with the rest of the South African public. And there are projects that I've covered later on as a byproduct where people are placed, but I'll touch on those later. In slide 7, I'm just highlighting here, or we are just highlighting what mandates us to take this route of training, or of intervening with the unemployed. In the main, it's covered by chapter 6 of the Unemployment Insurance Act. But this is read together, of course, with the Public Employment Services Act that says the minister can come with schemes that can intervene in the economy to reduce unemployment and poverty alleviation schemes. That can be funded by UIF. And therefore, the two acts read together, they give that balance for the minister to come with the necessary schemes. Moving on to page 9. On this page, Chairperson and honorable members, we are highlighting the three schemes that UIF is engaged in via leave activation in its intervention, in order to intervene in the economy. The first one is your training layoff schemes. Now, the training layoff scheme at this stage is used for companies that are in distress, that have not yet retrenched, but they are facing conditions that might necessitate retrenchment. Now, part of the intervention is for companies to go to CCMA via Section 199, where there's a possibility of retrenchment. Once that process is done, and the CCMA tick off and say, yes, you guys are candidates for TNS, then the process goes through the Department of Labor into a committee. In that committee, then the committee, given the conditions that are given, that it has been distressed, both financially and also operationally, that the company is such distress that it may have to retrench. But should the TLS be implemented, there could be interventions to retrain and reskill and refocus the company, and therefore they come via TLS. Now, in the main here, UIF contributes 75% of the wage bill of the people that are affected, which is kept at 9,358. Then the CTAS covers the training component of the TLS. Now, what we pick up here is there's a need for TLS, and that there's a possibility that possibly the way it is functioning and the way it is moving, there might be a need to streamline the process and make it more thinner so that the process can run at least within the period of 21 days that we're able to process. It comes in through CCMA, and it comes back to UIF and is processed much quicker. Then you have your training of unemployed. And here between the two ministers was an engagement where the two ministers were found each other. There's a possibility that since skills development moved to higher education, and UIF, the Department of Labor as a whole now, doesn't drive training as a key function, the two ministers agreed that there's a way that the CTAS and the TVETs and some of the state-owned universities can be used to drive training. And hence the focus is training of unemployed as an instrument. But here, the other parties that you use in the main are your Transnet, your South African Airways, and your Metrorail, which are state-owned entities. The good things about these entities, they have fully fledged training centers that have all the instruments, the training equipment, and the classes. And there's the room also for a workplace placement within Transnet where they can go and get their practical exposure. And this is how this came into being. The funding here, 50% with the CTAS, 50% is paid by UIF and 50% is paid by the CTAS. And also the distribution also of the trainees or the beneficiaries in the scheme has goes through the same process of 50%. We also use the TVETs where we run our training with the TVETs, and in this instance 100% of the is paid by UIF to train UIF on the technical skills that are required by the economy. There are instances where we train 30% of members in our database that are not necessarily UIF beneficiaries, mainly because the level of unskilled is so high that we open the room to open the door for the 30% that can be trained. Then the other instrument we have is our turnaround solution that is implemented via Productivity SA. The main driver here with turnaround solutions is to turn around organizations that are facing possible closure or distress, or they could turn things around and eat and still function. A simple one I can use is if you look at your mortuary, if you go into the community where people, the number of people that are dying has reduced, the mortuary approach can be turned one way or the other to provide other services. I mean, the mortuary has your tables, your tables, cots, and other instruments that are having. Now, the mortuary can be turned around to provide the same instruments that they have for birthday parties and other activities. To turn around. But I think what you bring is but it's just an example that companies can be turned around. Instead of closing down, they can turn around in towards a different market and still function. And moving on, in the next slide, we'll be highlighting the budget of labor activation since inception. I'm just going to touch on, for example, the lowest that we budgeted was 370 million for this project, with the highest at 1.7 billion. Our expenditure in this period, the lowest was 38 million and the highest was 160 million. In this budget, 62% of our budget goes towards training layoff schemes. Now, there's a purpose for so much budget going towards training layoff schemes because let's face them predictable. Companies could be facing difficulties against the economy. And we will not be caught wanting where there isn't enough funding to make those funds available and hence that much budget. I'll explain the underspending when I'm touching on each individual budget line. In the next slide, what I'm touching on that is your training of unemployed. Here, over the years, we have budgeted 2 billion from 2009 to 2017. The lowest we budgeted here is 40 million in 2009-2010, and the highest being in 2016-17 of 506 million. And the lowest that we spent here was also in 2009 at 4.2 million, and the highest in 2016-17 at 130 million. The key challenge here of the underspending. Our budget is driven by our 50-50 split with the CTAS. Now, once the agreement is reached with the CTAS, internal processes within CTAS don't always run smooth. Where you find, at time of implementation, there's bottlenecks in terms of implementation. As a result, in a particular financial year, we have to renew our agreement in the new year and get the agreement restarted. As you can see, in 16-17, there were more agreements that actually started coming into place and being implemented. As you can see, 130 million spent. It was that dry in the financial year when some of these tests resolved the internal issues that we're facing. With training layoff schemes, which is on page 12, this is the one that constitutes 2.8% of our total budget of labor activation. The key driver here, that will bring us to this level of under expenditure, honorable members and chair. When companies come and apply for training layoff scheme, there's a strict criteria that we need to tick in order for a company to qualify. One of them, they need to comply with statutory requirements of the country. Salaries, they need to contribute towards salaries in terms of their charges. They also need to contribute towards UIF as a requirement. Most of the companies that come don't meet these requirements. And you cannot find a company that isn't contributed towards UIF or towards SARS, because then it defeats the purpose of what you are doing. And the other one is companies are not always willing to disclose their financial statements because we need to see that they are indeed in distress. If they are not in distress, therefore why do you apply for training layoff scheme? But I think the other critical one is most companies, they go through the TLS. The process is supposed to run for 6 months, but within 2 months, companies already find their feet and are now beginning to be sustainable and they are running smoothly. And therefore, the 4 months of salary payments come back as savings for UIF. As a result, you see the level of expenditure because of those savings that we encounter, should some of the companies realize the benefits much quicker. In fact, we expect this also, the expenditure to become even lower because we've taken a decision with the DG that companies that come for training layoff schemes, most of them will need to redirect them towards productivity SA for productivity essays, we help them turn around in situations and get the business running differently and more smart. And in that way, you'd find that we may spend less on training of skills, but maybe more on turnaround solutions as the projects unfold. Then the next one on page 13 is our turnaround solutions. And once again here, over the years, collectively put, we had budgeted over 441 million for this project. The lowest happening between 2010 and 2012 at 48 million. I think we've combined those because the project started around 1st of October or towards the end of 2010. But we could have separated that, Chair, and honorable members, my apologies there. Our highest budget here in this space was in 1617 at 97 million, with our highest spent at 41 million in 2013-2014 at 41 million. Moving on page 15, I'll go back to turnaround solutions later. On page 15, this is just a high level of our project since inception with some of the terminologies clearly written down. But I'll skip this slide and go to the details like that reflects the project scheme. So I'll skip slide 15 and 14 and go to training of unemployed, to go directly to the actual scheme. As I said earlier, training of unemployed in the main is to enhance employability of UIF beneficiaries. Now in this instance, our engagement is with the CITAs, the TVAs, the universities, and some of the state-owned entities, as I mentioned, your Transnet, your Metro Rail, your South African Airways, because they're able to place learners, and some of them is 100% paid with the TVETs. And we try as much as possible that 30% of the people that we recruit are youth. And some of the time, the percentage is much higher. On page 18, with a completed project that started in on the 1st of October 2009, with a request proposal that was issued, the targeted response was 9,000 learners. But out of the 9,000, we were able to recruit about 6,000 learners, because not all the learners would meet the requirements for an apprentice, which would require math and science. As you can see, our numbers were much higher. So the requirements closed down on some of the learners. In terms of their recruitment, but they were picked up under your leadership program that has lesser stricter requirements for now from the 6,000, then this is the completed projects, and then with our current active projects, we have a total of 1,449 learners that we have targeted to recruit. But from that pool, again with the same reasons, that some of the requirements for your apprenticeship are a bit strict, math and science, it doesn't open a door for some of the learners, and therefore we move them across, but we're not able to recruit a full total of 1,449, but 91% at least were able to be recruited, with 872 going into apprentice, 433 into learnership, and 20 going into skills program. Our success rate is teacher. We were able to achieve to recruit the 100%. And I'll also show again this success rate with teacher when we look at the placement, that there was more placement with teacher than with others. Teacher and nurse teacher. And nurse teacher we targeted 293, but we were able to recruit 186. What I'm going to show now in slide 20 is just a breakdown of those projects that were completed and the numbers that were reflecting. I wouldn't walk through each number, but I think members can see on slide 20. I hope you are fine in the year 2. You are fine? Oh, yes. Oh, in terms of the numbering, on slide 20, it's a reflection of those projects that were completed, both in terms of recruitment and in terms of the actual recruitment. These are completed projects. On page 20, we are intended here 6,000, but we're able to recruit 5,000, and the 5,500 completed projects. And we look at the UIF teacher skills project, here we're able to achieve 100%. Can I take it for granted, Chair, and not go through each number line by line, that the numbers are reflected there so members can see. Mm-hmm. Members come to it. Okay. So that will cover slide 21. Slide 21 also is a reflection of those numbers that are completed. Slide 22 is the same principle. It's a reflection of those projects. Then on slide 23, moving forward, these are the projects that are active, that have started. Some of them are sales projects that started sales.
Sir, it's an
exigency.
Yeah, it's an exigency. We don't have 20. We only have up to 20. Yeah.
I think the members may have up to page 20, but not necessarily slide 20. Look at the top of the slide, on the top right, on the page number.
Okay. No, sorry, Chair.
Okay.
So I'm was confusing me as well.
Okay. So now we are on slide 24, top right corner. Okay, once again, here, Chairperson and Honorable Members, we are looking at the active projects that are currently running. And what I'm highlighting here is the numbers per host employer and also the type of train that they are going through. The numbers and actually what has been reported. Now, this is slide 24, slide 25 is the same. Slide 26, slide 27, and slide 28. It covers those projects that are active now with the numbers that are being reported. And if you go to slide 29, we're looking at turnaround solutions. And here also I'll be focusing on the budget and spend. I think I've also explained earlier on slide 29. In the main, what we're trying to do with turnaround solutions is to turn around organizations. Reserve jobs to avoid any possible retrenchment with whatever possibility that the general solution can do. And it varies from different interventions to the other. In some instances, it's a question of retraining, helping them to how they run the organization, and it varies depending on the need of the organization. Then on slide 30 is a summary of what has been done to date. Now, in the main UIF funds, 100% of turnaround solutions, which is one of the instruments within Productivity SA. And to date, we spent about 202 million towards turnaround solutions, which is 46% of the total budget. They've been able to bring 49,000 jobs with this instrument with intervention of 193 companies. And if this instrument can be implemented, we implement the full fund. Possibilities are higher that you could intervene more and better and save more jobs by this instrument. What we have on page 31 is a reflection of the budget and expenditure of over since 2010 up to 2017. And this page for 2017, we transferred 14 million. They have 4.1 million that they had left in the previous financial year that they also used. So for quarter one, they had about 18 million that was available for them to use. At this stage, we are still looking at their report for quarter one to validate effect before we can tabulate on how many companies were actually assisted and how many jobs were saved. But you see the project that we are doing with this project. The last one is the health scheme. I think I've explained slide 32 briefly earlier. And then slide 33 is a reflection that I explained when I was explaining each scheme in the beginning. What we have on slide 34 is the expenditure to date for each year from 2010 up to 2018. The number of companies that were who applied and qualified and met the requirements of the training level schemes, and we have the number of employees that were actually impacted, that were trained and were retained within the organization. And we have budget allocated and actual budget. And as I explained earlier, what causes it may appear like an under expenditure here, but in the main, some of these is savings that you can get due to companies recuperating much quicker than expected. Instead of 6 months, some of them take 2 months, some of them 3 months. Because one of the requirements is for the company to bring a business plan on how they're going to turn things around. And project plan. And then in terms of successful projects, on slide 35, now moving on to slide 36, what you highlight in here is that even though honorable members and chairperson, there was no focus of placement. What you are highlighting here, Chair, is that even though there wasn't focus with the labor function project in the beginning to place learners and make sure that learners have a job, and once they are trained, they are actually placed in a they are placed in a proper work and what not. They are placed in a job opportunity that they get back into. We have success areas of about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 companies where we trained UIF beneficiaries. They went through work exposure and then they were placed in the company and they were employed there. On the next page, on slide 37, what we are highlighting is the companies where these learners had workplace exposure and they were trained. And because of the workplace exposure, some of the learners were absorbed by other companies other than the ones where they were getting their exposure. If you take, for example, the training program on the scuba diving, we had trained 100. Three were absorbed by the Mzansi Scuba Driving, but the majority of them were absorbed by other institutions, where through TITA we were able to engage with the South African police to absorb some of our learners, where they can do rescue for kids that get drowned in the train. The scuba divers are the ones that go and rescue these kids and rescue them underground. So that's where the 58 of the learners went to. But I think the rest of the slide is a reflection of those percentages where we're able to assist and negotiate absorption, with our highest being at 77% with TITA, and our lowest was 23% with MERCITA. But I think the highest in number is our MQA learnership with EXARO. That absorbed about 568 learners. Now, it's a reflection that it's possible to also try placement and also absorption. Some of our interventions. And then, Chair, the last two slides speaks to the companies that were visited by the portfolio committee previously. What we did, Chair, after our previous meeting, we visited some of these companies, we got a detailed consent, we put together a report, and what we've done in the slide 39 is to summarize our numbers from those visits. I think I'll pause at that. Maybe clear some of the questions, some of the issues with the questions that are asked. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the report. The report is very good. No, I'm joking.
Don't sound like my colleague. He says good, but you don't know what is good, you don't know what is wrong.
No, 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 it's very good. Let me just say, no, the report is good, it must be appreciated. But I just want to zoom in to one space, which I think will be a flagship of the labor and transition program, the one of the training of unemployed. I think it's impressive. And also, I appreciate that the details in terms of the host company of labor policy. However, I would wish the details to go further in terms of, because you see, there's a lot of vulgarization of artisanship and also apprenticeship programs. So the only way to legitimize an understanding of whether the program is apprenticeship or not is when one, you are able to indicate the trade, and second, you are able to indicate the duration of the program. Because there are many employers that will engage learners into a program of less than a year, and that learner will march out of that company thinking that he's an apprentice, he's an artisan, because he was engaged into a program. Yet he was engaged in a short course program that talks to a specific element of artisanship. And only to learn later, you are not an artisan. You still need to do a full duration of learnership, which will take about 4 years. Now I'm saying, to legitimize the report, it must have a detail of the duration of the apprenticeship, that, and further have a detail of the training. Then we'll be able to say indeed we are training apprentices that will become artisans in South Africa. And you still retain the host, the column that talks to host employers. Because I know that the struggle that teachers and obviously the Department of Labor go through to find host somebody. Then the other one, and in fact, even the good thing about the program is that perhaps if, as a committee, we might also spend time specifically to do oversight on the labor division. Because it's something that we must talk about, the positive thing, the good thing. And you couple it with the feedback we are receiving regarding the absorption rate. When you look at that slide that talks to the absorption rate, it makes you believe that indeed we are moving towards the right direction. Leave out the fact that we still have an economy that is shedding jobs, that does not create jobs, but the reality is that the report indicates to a positive direction. Now, the unfortunate one, that unfortunately, I might be negative, is the one of the training levels. I move from a perspective that it remains a waste of money. And I'm glad that the commission has indicated that because of the duration of it is 6 months, and in all practicality, there is no layoff. Company, out of hundreds, you can't have more than 10 companies laying off employees for a period of 6 months. Layoff is often a week, is often a month, is often the maximum will probably be 2 months. And I want to urge you, there is no training intervention that is effective, that can respond to the market need within a space of 2 months. So I'm arguing that it remains a useless intervention. It's a nice to have, however. It's a nice to have thing. Otherwise, it is not going to have any impact. But I would rather argue that perhaps the best one you could have instead of that is a retrenchment assistance plan. Because a person that is retrenched is a person that is out of the market. And therefore, you can engage that person to a program which is going to train him and have him a skill for a better situation where you have a portable skill and be able to come back to the market. But the training of over a period of 2 months, it doesn't make sense, because there are few companies that can lay off employees for 6 months. The most 2 months, and there is no training that you can do over that period. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
refer to slide number 10 as a starting point. If one look at the whole thing about the labor activation program, it's a positive thing, and I think that it's an initiative that is necessary given the current economic climate that we find ourselves in. But if I look at that particular slide, and I don't know how to react to it, because there's a consistent low expenditure in terms of budget amount. So the way one can interpret it is that you want to look at the low disbursement of funds, then it would suggest that all is rather well within our context and our environment, because 62% of that will go to the turnaround solutions to labor training on your schemes, and the rest will go for training, and you know, it's just concerning, and Mr. Norupe has given explanations for why the expenditure is so low, but I'll come back to that. Then I want to link up with my colleague here in terms of the training layoff schemes, and if you look at that and where does it come from, what's the genesis of the training layoff scheme? It started in 2010, so just after the Soccer World Cup, where there was a high degree of economic activity and employment with regard to the building of stadiums, etc. And after the World Cup, many of our people who were employed will suddenly find themselves in a position of unemployment. So that is where it started. I remember that very well, because at the CCMA I was involved in assisting companies and assist companies with regard to this particular process. So the purpose of the training loan scheme is basically to save jobs. And if you can't save the jobs, enable those that will be without a job, equip them with portable skills, and they'll be able to find a job quickly. So you want to look at the low disbursement of funds with regard to training layoff scheme. And I want to agree with my colleague, Mr. Haula, that it's concerning. And I think you made a very valuable suggestion in terms of we need to look at perhaps a different way of assisting companies with support our idea of the retrenchment assistance scheme, perhaps that could assist companies and particularly employees who will find themselves without a job. But I think what is more important than Mr. Marupeng was saying in his presentation, there are strict criteria, and there ought to be, and there should be strict criteria, because there are people who perhaps wouldn't qualify. And we year in and year out, Productivity South Africa come to our committee. They lament the fact that they are underfunded, that they don't have enough money to do the work that they can do. And we know that with the limited resources that they have, that they are able to do quite admirable work in terms of assisting companies to become financially more viable. And the committee has the good fortune of visiting some of those projects and with this for ourselves as the kind of intervention that it can do. And perhaps, as Mr. Marupeng was saying, is that we should consider perhaps increasing the subsidy and channel it perhaps, in a greater degree towards products to Africa so that we can assist companies to become more financially viable. Then I'd like to refer to slide 17. The funding model explained for training of the unemployed. The current projects, and maybe I should just one or two questions, and I'm done, and I hope other members would like to engage. Current projects of the training of the unemployed. Now, this vertical, I mean, there's a breakdown of the current projects from slide 24 onwards. What is quite obvious and quite revealing is that there are very few projects being supported in the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape and in other provinces, and most of the projects that are being supported by the UIF are concentrated in basically two provinces, that is Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. And I'd like to know why, because the Eastern Cape is a big province and it requires a lot of intervention, similarly in Limpopo and in the Free State. Why the concentration in two provinces only? And then lastly, slide number 34 is related to the training layoff scheme. And for the last financial year, that is 2016 and 17, there was one company assisted in the scheme. But the expenditure related to that one company was almost 2 million rand. Now maybe we can just get more clarity on that. Although the company has 325 employees, to my mind, perhaps almost 2 million on one company seems a bit excessive. And maybe there's a logical explanation for that. That's on page 24, slide 24. And I'll stop here, Madam Chair. Thank you for your indulgence.
Commissioner wants you to repeat the last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I was referring to slide number 34. That being the training layoff scheme payments over a period of time and in last financial year 2016 and 17. And the question was, only one company was assisted to the tune of almost 2 million rand. To me, it might appear excessive. Who is that company? And maybe there's a logical reason as to why it is the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable America. Honorable Beckham. And thanks, Chair. Honorable Tessa, the door.
Thank you. I've just got one question, and it's more philosophical. The training layoff scheme, I'm not a fan of it, and I think I might have said that before to the DG. Both the trade unions and the employer bodies don't really support it. For a whole lot of reasons, it's expensive to get just one person either trained and found another job, and
it becomes a major expense, and I think I need to do the studies into it as to what it costs per person who's actually been placed and how much you've spent on it. I don't know if you've done those studies yet, but it seems to be a negative and it seems to have failed, and we keep harping on this. I'm not sure why. I suppose because all we've got is that scheme, and so we keep pouring money into it, and I don't believe it is. The objective is being sorted out at all. We've got approximately 10 million people in South Africa who can't find jobs, just under 10 million. And you're looking only at the workforce, and you're trying to say it's just a few jobs. And I'm not sure whether the training lab scheme is the correct vehicle for that. The other thing is, of course, the training layoff scheme is using the CETAs. Well, I'm not a fan of the CETAs either, because the CETAs, most of them have audit problems. I think most of them have failed their audits. I think only one, Mercita, the only one that passed its audit. And over and above that, the CETAs are also, the expenditure is enormous for the training of one individual. And why are we not using the private sector for the training? I'm not sure, because most of the employers don't trust the employees that have been trained through their CETAs. And so we're not finding people being placed once they have trained through a CETA. So you've got two functions. One is the training layoff scheme, and it's using the CETA, and both those schemes, I believe, are failures in the long term. That was my comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. As I was saying, yes, the issue, it was always bad day, because when you bad day, things go well. So you must have these bad days every day so that you are not angered by yourself. They do what you expect to do.
Page 29, it says the purpose is to preserve education and make sure that companies are not closing. So then, my comment will be from bad to good. There is an improvement on the report since last we met. We were not happy, and even the commissioner says I'm taking the full responsibility of making sure that I'll make some intervention. And some intervention, you can see there is intervention in the UIF. However, you need to maintain the standards now moving forward, because I don't want to see next time when we go on oversight, because we have tabled the report then, the same, we experience the same thing that we experienced last on the oversight. And to say their report is good, the slide 39, where it says HR registered numbers, male, female, youth, Costa Lena, I think there is, Uhaula said the issue of duration and the year. 39. There is no indication there saying for how long, when those letters were taken into the process book. I think that's what I think is outstanding there. But they had to say, DG, thanks for not pointing our deal to it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm mostly covered by the previous speaker, so I won't repeat what they said. But I just want to make an emphasis in terms of the loan expenditure ratio as well. So my question would be, if you are continuously, because it's a continuous trend on a yearly basis, if you are continuously seeing that the expenditure trends are not improving, why are you so budgeting so much money? So are you not over budgeting instead of using the money for something else? You continuously budgeting more money in terms of these areas. Then when we look at slide 37, in terms of the placement proof of concept, the overall absorption rate is 58%, which to me is not very good, taking into consideration the high level of youth unemployment we currently faced with.
So my concern is, while you, or my question is, when you are skilling or ensuring that these people are being skilled, are you following them up in terms of if they are not placed, looking into other avenues for them to secure employment? And also, what haven't been touched on is, in any of these interventions, what is your dropout rate? Thank you. Let me welcome the report. Having welcomed the report, I just want to check the few following issues. You are utilizing TVET colleges and universities as your training centers. What is the approach when you deal with those in remote rural areas? Because there are areas where you have neither TVET nor a university. Do you have to go and accommodate them elsewhere and pay all that? That's one clarity, I think. Then, going to slide 10, seeing on your performance, is that not related to advocacy, the fact that you are spending legal than you would love to spend? Because if there's not enough advocacy, you won't be in a position to attract the required clientele. The last one is, I've looked from slide 20 to the last one where you are giving us a list of the institutions you've worked with. I'm amazed because the list we had last time included Toyota, Fenton, Martin and Robinson, to mention a few, but they are not nowhere in your list. Toyota Fenton is the last site we visited, which made us stop our visit when we were on oversight. Why are they not in the list? Or is it because the GG said you are still combined? What happened? Thank you.
I think it you can answer the GG. Just one question. In the list, you only highlighted those that you sent the students in. So those that you were students 3 years or 4 years ago, they are not in the system. They also at the computer.
I'll deal with the philosophical ones first, and the commissioner will then fill in the technical ones for the required details. I agree with Honorable Khaula that there's some information missing there. In fact, we want to provide far more than that. We want to track even those that have not been found out where they spent money. That's the essence of what we cannot be understood as a department. We want to have that database updated on a regular basis. We welcome the fact that the committee will be spending more time on this level. Projects. But I think that if we do this thing right, this has the potential to to assist the unemployed. And we want to make sure that we do it the right way as a department. I do not necessarily share the view that training layoff scheme is a waste of time. I think that what we may need to do, as we indicated to the committee before, is to modernize pending layoff scheme so that it suits the current conditions. As the Honorable America indicated when he spoke about the genesis of this training layoff scheme, it was for a specific time and to address specific conditions. Remember, from 2008, we had the economic downturn where a lot of companies shed jobs, and also a lot of companies were in distress. And as a result of that, we had to come up with this intervention. And again, after 2010, when a number of employees were laid off. Now, what happens in a situation where a company changes its line? If you look at Mercedes-Benz, for instance, so if there's a new model, what normally companies do, they would change the line. And when they change the line, you've got a number of employees that are going to be laid off. Now, the question is, when do we get to know that there will be a change in the production line so that we can then come in and intervene as a department? Now, I agree with you, 2 months, 3 months training program, which doesn't yield the positive results, is a waste of money. That's why we're looking repackaging the training layoff scheme so that it responds to the current challenges that we have. And by the way, Honorable Bagrim, if you look at what the commissioner has presented, we've actually spent far less in the training layoff scheme compared to other programs. So we have not wasted money thus far when it comes to the training layoff scheme, because the uptake has not been that great because of a number of reasons. One of those reasons is that we have been very, very reluctant to support companies that do not want to subject themselves to scrutiny. If you saying you are in a distress, lay your books on the table so that we can see that, so that the intervention that we're going to come up with will address the key challenge that you have. And some of the challenges are very straightforward challenges. It's an accounting issue where some companies they put all their costs as fixed costs and they don't vary their costs. It's a best practice. And if something happens in one area, it affects the entire company. So these are some of the things that we want to get involved in, but we don't want to waste money. But we think that training layoff scheme has a role to play if we package it in such a way that it makes a lot of sense even to skeptics. That's why we're not concerned now about the displacement, because we knew that if we had not accepted some of the applications, the expenditure is going to be low. And as we tighten the screws, we want to find projects that will have a positive impact, not just put money in the drink. I think last time we made an example of the Highfield Steel, where we refused to take part because of some of the PSA, Honorable America, the issue of the PSA, particularly South Africa, being underfunded, I think this is something that we have addressed with the Productivity South Africa. They are in the process of resolving the challenges that led to them to be underfunded by unemployment insurance fund. And when we place seriousness on governance, unfortunately that results in some of these things where we're saying we're prepared to fund, but account for the funds that are given to you. So it was one of those problems that we have now resolved with the Productivity South Africa. We agreed that we will fund the project by project. So they will present a project and how much that project will cost, and on the basis of that, we will then fund. There are very few projects in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape. Honorable Chair and Honorable America, there's some information that we have. It's not that we don't do anything in the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. As I said when we started, that some of the information we were still putting together. So we do have information relating to the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape projects as well. So there are projects that we had in the Western Cape, and some of them are currently running. We welcome the comments with regards to the improvement of the report. I hope that every day is going to be my birthday as well. I think Honorable Van Kagwijk, we take the point that some areas we over budgeted, and I think as we look at the areas that we're going to find going forward, so this is going to come as a learning experience to us as well as a department, because we know where the spending pressures are and we know where we need. For instance, in the training of unemployed, that's where we need to put more money going forward, and that's what we're going to do. And in fact, we've even increased the number of people that we want to train who are unemployed going forward, because we need to make sure that we don't talk about a few thousands when the rate of unemployment is close to 10 million people. So we also increase the target that year. At this rate, at this moment, unfortunately, we don't have information relating to the dropout rate, but I can assure you that we will have this information as we try to improve our record management and our data. We will be able to have that information. And also, I think the commissioner indicated when we started that the focus really has not been on placement. It has been on the enhancing the employability of the UIF beneficiaries. It's only now that we'll also put an effort to make sure that if these learners are not placed, at least those who have expressed a need to start their own businesses will also assist them to move into that direction. Commissioner, can you then respond to other questions?
You've taken most of the questions. And you've taken my moment of shine away. On page 39, we've covered the Toyota visit. We separated them, the ones that were visited by the portfolio, on page 39. So you can reflect on those. On page 39, and then the issue around remote areas, I think this one, Chair and Honorable Members, we haven't really given it much attention, in all honesty. We've used MIT teachers to assist us because of their reach. But I think this is one of the areas that we need to pay attention to, on how best we can also target different areas, including other comments that members have made. That would make the report, that would enrich the report, and it would make it much better. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. There was a question about the trades that we need to indicate. We will send the information through the DG's office. I'll just make an example of the current apprenticeship that is done through Transnet. We are training welders, we're training platers, we're training electricians. There is a new trade whereby they've combined electricians and mechanics. We are also training electro-mechanicians. It's a new trade, yes. We'll also send you the other trades that are done by NERSITA. There was a question of duration when it comes to apprenticeship or artisan training. When it comes to artisan training, if honorable members may look at the expenditure when it comes to training of artisan, you will realize that there is a slide that shows that we were paying, at some point, we were paying 112,000 per learner. At some point, we were paying 139,000 per learner. Currently, we are paying 150,000 per learner. The 112,000 or the 139,000 or the current 150,000, it's a three-year training program. It is also inclusive of stipends. And then there was also a comment on sitters. Most of the sitters that have audit problems, Auditor General at some point identified that we had a tendency of also funding the state-owned entities that were not doing fairly well in terms of managing their financial resources. So we were then advised to come up with more controls. And again, before the technical evaluation committee decides to make a recommendation to a delegated authority, all state-owned entities are requested to submit audited financial statements. If we are not happy with their audited financial statement, there is always a recommendation that let us put more controls. In cases whereby we pay an advance tranche, if a state-owned entity hasn't been doing fairly well, we do not pay that advance tranche. Instead, we expect them to pay, to go ahead with the training and invoice UIF as part of the control. Lastly, there was also a comment on the sitters that are expensive. I just want to indicate where does the rate that talks to 112,000, 113,000, and also 150,000 per learner comes from. There is a board which is called NAM, National Artisan Moderating Body. It is the one that decides on how much needs to be paid for the stipend, for artisan training program. And again, when it comes to learnership, it's also decided by higher education and training. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members.
Thank you. Before I say anything, or before I close, is there anything that members would want to, or you want to follow up questions? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think that the Commissioner responded to my last question, and that is with regard to the training level scheme of almost 2 million rand to one company. And then just that's some slide 34, I think, if I'm correct. Slide 34, yes. And then just a follow-up question, perhaps, Madam Chair, is that seeing that we have so much underspent money and the need for training is unlimited, of course, and is there a legal impediment, DG, with us engaging with SALGA to have a partnership so that we could via SALGA and municipalities in rural areas in particular, provide those municipalities with the assistance that we give to private companies in terms of, you know, training apprentices and other skilled people who work in municipalities? That's just a question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, my technical expert is here. The one on slide 34 is Scometal, the company. And the cost is covered by the wages. Our focus is 75% of the wages. Given that it's Scometal, the likelihood is most of these are artisans and the salaries might be higher.
Can I just
add
that in?
Thank you, Mr. Arabic. So is the company still in operation? I mean, has they sort of turned the corner given that kind of assistance, or has they subsequently retrenched employees to effect the turnaround in their financial fortunes?
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. We have requested to the team that deals with Gauteng to go and check what is actually happening. If we go to the actual payment, what was approved for this company, for Scometal, is a company that is in Gauteng. The department had approved 11 million. So the first tranche, the actual payment return there is first tranche. So when we went there to do the target, the target, targeted employees to be trained were 325. So after transferring the 1.9 million first tranche, we then went to do the monitoring. We then discovered that they had trained far less than the 325,000 the 325 employees that we had approved, yes. And then that's when we realized that there must be something that is not going well. What they then did, upon realizing that we're following up the first tranche, they then sent us an email saying, they don't, remember, we had approved 11 million. They then said they do not want the difference anymore. That's when we have requested the team that is in Gauteng to go and check as to what has actually happened, what could be the cause, because we were expecting 325 to be trained. Why far less than 325? They've sent an email saying they are no longer interested in our money anymore. So we will communicate as to what we our findings. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you. I will allow members, I know that have another thing, okay, did you?
The last question was on the partnership with SALGA. Yeah. We are working with the municipalities. I think in October we are in Grahamstown. We have a program with the Makana municipality there. So we are working with them, and in our engagement with the, we're going to have a session where we engage the employers as well. So SALGA has been invited as well.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. When it comes, I'm just making an addition from what the DG has indicated. Currently, if the question was, what are we currently doing in partnership with the municipalities? When it comes to the learnership, which is called Building and Civil Construction, we are investing 1.8 million per TVET college, which is a construction sector accredited. We've encountered problems whereby the sectors are not, the TVET colleges are not construction sector accredited. So the MOU is a tripartite arrangement. The TVET college provides training when it comes to the theory. The municipalities are signatories of that MOU on building and civil construction. The reason why they are signatories is because they assist us with web-based exposure using their infrastructure
department is the infrastructure project. Thank you.
Just want to give an opportunity to members who wanted to comment on the presentations of the department or any comments that they want to make towards the department. I had the Honorable Bakram first. You remember, Dr. Honorable Bakram?
Mm-hmm.
It's the time for you to address Mr. Mafata.
No, I don't have
anything anymore.
I wanted to compliment you.
Okay, please do that.
Yes, I just, when we first met with Mr. Mafata, and you'll recall when he first started and he was introduced, and I had said to him that he's receiving a hunchback because he's been taking on a part of the department which has got a history of over 20 years of maltreatment, malfeasance, real problems. I can actually see it turning the corner, and I want to compliment him on that, on the structure that he's putting into place. I don't think it's there yet, and we're still going to test him over the next year, but I do want to compliment him for it. I have, over the past year now, been sending him regular, almost daily correspondence. He gets back to me immediately, and his staff are getting back to me. I think it is important for us as a committee to actually note that and to put it on the table and to give him compliments where it is due. I love attacking people, but on this occasion I must admit that I don't have that attack. So I appreciate everything he's doing and the support he's getting from the DG. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you so much, Honorable Bakram. No, you don't like to attack people. You only attack one person, don't worry. Yeah, that one is very hard to do. Honorable Teko, for the hands up. Oh, okay, Honorable Fanta.
Thank you, Chairperson. I know that we can be very harsh with the community sometimes in the department, and as much as we scold when it's needed, I think we have to give credit also when it's due. And it's not because today is the birthday of the DG that we are doing it, but I think we need to pause sometime and also give credit, and especially with regards to the reports that we have received, the presentations, and also the feedback that we are receiving on our questions that we pose. The clarifications, I think we need to commend the department, both the DG as well as the compensation fund and the UIF, in terms of how they've handled and how the mile that they've walked in terms of giving us elaborate questions or answers on the questions. And even if they were sent back, they eloquently presented to us, I think, what we needed, and I think we need to commend them at this stage. But don't relax, because next time might be a different story. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. Any more? Okay, let me first start by what might some of you have not seen before my comment. In any meeting, whether it's a rural meeting, whether it's any kind of meeting, if you are at a round table or in a table like this, there is no way that you cannot be allowed to whisper to people around you and talk. But it is not, well, it's not, does not happen when Honorable Pansikar make me stand up whilst other people are presenting, and DG stand up, and then they speak on each other's ears. It's not on. So that's what I was stopping. So I hope it will not happen again. Because really, you can go out, you can talk, you can send messages, you can send your WhatsApp and talk to WhatsApp. People talk to WhatsApp in the meetings. Do that. It's allowed. You know, so, but at least it sends a different message when you will stand up
and the other one. And then because the whole now behind the people are disrupting. Fortunately, I am sitting like this. Other people might not see, but I can see. So that's what irritated that speech. So that when we get out of the meeting, there is no misrepresentation of why I said people must get out instead. That was what I was talking to. Now, you know, when I entered that door, I saw the first person that I've seen is Miss Monya. I saw brightness in her face, and I knew that today all is well, and you are here. And she was, you know, calm throughout, and I knew that you are your sister, and all of your friends. And thank you very much, and thank you for the leadership that you are providing to the department. It's a quality leadership, as you heard the members, that we are, as this committee, appreciating. And leaders, they accept criticism. Instant leaders, they react to criticism, because criticism is not chocolate. I once went to another school that I won't mention. They would say, one of the big writers would say, criticism is not chocolate. It takes great leaders and those who know what is there or what is that they are doing or what responsibilities that they are holding, that they will be criticized, but they will not be attacked. They will not be, you know, destroyed, but they will be criticized, because there are two things. When you see things, we are human. When there are wrong things, if I'm not good enough in something else, continue. But once, because immediately, once you start attacking all the time, the response will be attack. But we are not, we are always, you know, we'll, where you are good, we say you are good, and we'll afford you, and where you are bad. And I don't remember any meeting where you left out here and you complain about the leadership style from you. So what I want to say, on, you are not the best. No one is the best. But you are learning, you are in that right path. And when you say, lift up the fingers and say it's not right, then you come back, you stop everything, you leave your family, do what is right, and all of you and your people, your subordinates as well, to obey and understand, you know, what you are. Because at the end of the day, it's not them who are answering. They can talk. What they say does not really count much, because it counts. But when she sat down, you don't want to hear from them. You are an accounting. Without you here, there's no delegation. I don't want to sit in the delegation that does not teach. Not anywhere. Members of Parliament, that's what they do. So, thank you so much. Be patient with us. As my colleague has said, the times might be too hard, but understand where you come from. And from that very day, you understood where you came from. You were all appointed. You all understood. And when you left this Parliament that day, you worked on that issue. And that's why today we can smile on your birthday. Thank you so much. And with those words, you can be released quietly. Let's send members.
quietly. Okay.
Okay, 5 minutes.